welcome to episode 37 of Role Play Grow, the podcast for tabletop entrepreneurs, creators, and fans. I am Courtney Stover of Lighthearted Adventures, and in this podcast, we talk to the creators behind the brands and the tabletop role play gaming space about who they are and how they are turning their passion for gaming into a career. Hello, friends! I hope those of you in the States had a lovely Thanksgiving holiday last week and were able to enjoy the day rather than fight with your uncle about vaccines, masks, or other fun topics. I am going to start today's episode off on a bit more of a personal note. So here is a content warning for health and surgery stuff. If you don't want to hear this, then go ahead and skip forward by a couple of minutes and you should be good. All right, so if you follow me on Twitter, at KetraWCR, you probably know this, but if you don't, I've only mentioned it in passing on a handful of episodes. 6 weeks ago, towards the end of October, I underwent a pretty major surgery that involved putting a bar in my chest to help reconstruct my sternum and ribcage. Yes, it is just as painful as it sounds, and probably even more so. In preparation for this surgery and the fact that it would take a while to recover, I batch recorded a ton of interviews with the plan to have them all edited and uploaded and get us through the end of the year. However, my surgery was actually moved up pretty last minute, so the last episode with Anna of D&D Disability was the last one that I had ready to go before my surgery. That is the main reason that I missed sharing an episode last week. I'm definitely still in recovery, but I'm able to edit from bed, so I'm hoping to get us back on track. I'll be trying really hard to keep up with the weekly schedule through December, but if I do wind up missing a week or uploading a day or two late, this is why. I can assure you that recovery is going well, and I'm actually able to move around a lot easier than I was a few weeks ago. So I've still got a ways to go, but it's getting easier all the time. So not that you need to in any way, but if you feel like contributing to my soup fund, not to mention that I kind of need a whole new wardrobe, then we do have a Ko-fi account at ko-fi.com/lightheartadventures. Or you can support us in ways like checking out our map packs on DM's Guild via an author search of Lightheart Adventures, or by checking out our Patreon at patreon.com/lightheartadventures. For today's guest, have you ever considered writing a series of novels about your D&D campaign? Because that is exactly what the lovely couple over at Tal and Rue Travels are doing. Scott Ropel shares the inspired story of how he and Ashley are turning their D&D campaign into an 8-book series, and it's based entirely off how things go in their campaign. We talk about the logistics of an ever-changing story, their whole production process, and we even talk about how they bought a camper van to explore nature to influence their ideas. They have a pretty fascinating story, and I can't wait for you to hear it. So thank you, as always, for checking out Roleplay Grow, and I hope you enjoy this conversation with Scott. Today, I am very honored to introduce you all to the co-founder of Tal and Rue Travels and co-author of the Thread of Souls book series, Scott Ropel. Hello, Scott. How are you today?
Hi, I'm doing pretty great. Thank you for asking. Thanks for having us here. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm really excited to dive into everything that y'all are doing. It looks really cool. It's really fun. And I gotta say, the first time I went to your website, the song on the main page was amazing, and I really want to know about that song.
You're the first one to actually say that that's a good thing, and I worked really, really hard on that video. The song, unfortunately, don't know the title of it. Remember, it's from one of the streaming downloads you could find. Epidemic Sound is what it's from, and I not to get too carried away right now, but I edit with music, and that's just what I picked for the overall theme of the website. It felt fantasy and epic, like Lord of the Rings, so I just went with it.
That works. And sorry to throw you off, but
no, you're good. keep me on my toes.
Excellent. We'll make it fun. Well, to officially start things off, can you tell everybody a bit about yourself and how you got into the gaming space?
Yeah, sure. So I've been a big video gamer since I could pick up a controller. That's basically my spiel for. And anyone who asks me, if I was young enough to hold a controller in my hand, Nintendo 64, whatever, I'm gaming. was really when I got to like Elder Scrolls and Morrowind and Skyrim and all that, where I was like, you know, this is pretty cool. You know, the worlds and the lore and the established, you know, characters they have. I love just diving into that and learning more about it. And it's not, you know, all about fighting things or destroying monsters. It's about exploring and just going around and finding what's in the world and learning more about it. It's kind of the weird part, but I love reading books in these games. Like if you go to Skyrim, there's thousands of books about these characters that you'll never meet, but I just love learning about them and you know, getting into their head and what they do and how they lived. It's just fascinating to me. So really, it's from an early age, you know, my best friend at the time, we loved telling stories and going out and, you know, acting them out outside, you know, picking up sticks and fighting each other, all that, casting spells. Not full on LARP. That's hopefully coming one day, but we'll get there when we get there. And then when I picked up the Hobbit book, I just instantly fell in love with fantasy. And it was just, this is the greatest book of all time. And nothing will beat it. Until I made my own book with my wife, Ashley, and Thread of Souls was kind of born. And then it was like, no, this is now the greatest book. Not to, you know, hey, go me, but go us. It's just learning about and to build a world and to tell these stories of characters is just so fascinating to me. And then D&D hit. And then I was just like, the world is so small. And now Dungeons and Dragons is here. And it's an endless open sea of opportunity. And it's just, it's been growing and cascading ever since then.
Are you playing in any campaigns right now?
We are playing in ours, one that we homebrewed, the Thread of Souls campaign, as we've now officially been calling it. We started it in 2015, and it's been going on for 6 years. And we've had, you know, various friends play, jump in, jump out, and then it's been officially Ashley and I playing for the past, oh geez, I want to say probably going on 1.5-2 years. So it's been like a one-on-one campaign, and that's just even more special to me than I could ever imagine.
Oh, yeah, that's really fun. I love duet games. Mm-hmm. There's just so much more intimacy that you're able to have in really exploring the characters and even specific NPCs they meet. That's really cool.
Yeah, definitely. And we did, for a time, we played with B. Dave Walters for some of his home games. Some of his games he was running on his Patreon. He's since ended it, but we kind of got to, you know, form this relationship with him and the players he was with. And that was really fun and kind of opened up a new way to explore characters, because you're playing it instead of in person. It's this digital platform where you don't ever get to see people, but it's only, I don't know how to explain it. It's this weird mix of like, yes, we're still playing D&D, but we're not in the same room, but it's still the same amount of fun.
Yeah, definitely.
Sense.
Yeah, that's really cool. Yeah, how did you get into writing?
That's the story. It's a bit, I would consider it unconventional. I didn't grow up being like, I want to be a fantasy writer. I want to write these stories of these characters I'm playing. You know, I'd much rather sit down and play Elder Scrolls Online, where I have my character and the story involves around me and what's happening at the time. But growing up, it wasn't, you know, as big as this, create this open world, create this character, your morals and your flaws and everything. It was just goofing off with friends and, you know, looking at like a magic card and being like, what does this character do? You know, what are they like? And then, you know, eventually just be like, oh, I got magic cards, now let's just play. But mine was story's a little different, because I went into television news writing. So writing like newscast and script writing for news of the day and, you know, political stories like that. And it didn't really branch off from that until a few years into it, where I was like, I could do this and write about, you know, things I really like, not just, you know, this person got elected or whatever. It's just, I could write about comic books. I could literally write about The Hobbit as a living, and for my personal website, for our personal website, or for, you know, websites like Polygon or Kotaku. So I started out as a journalist, which is a very interesting career. I enjoyed it while it lasted, but I much prefer being able to have this open reign and freedom to just do what I want, find a story, what I want, and talk about it, because I'm so passionate about it. Ashley's story is a little more interesting than mine, so I can get into that if you want.
Yeah, I would love to hear about Ashley's side too.
She, geez, She has been writing since, as I said, I've been playing games since I could pick up a controller. She has been writing ever since she could put pen to paper. She started out by, you know, drawing comics, little arts of, you know, pets or dogs or people she knew, and then writing stories about their lives that may not actually have happened, but, you know, things that she would be think would be interesting at the time. And then she got really heavily into fan fiction, which I did not know anything about fan fiction until I met her. And it opened up this door of like, what do you mean these two characters are falling in love? They don't do that in the show. That's, you know, outrageous, but also super amazing. And so she's won all these awards, community awards for her fan fictions. And it's just been incredible to see and experience that with her, to just see the other side of a storyteller, of just, you know, watch her as she creates, watch her as she draws the characters, and everything comes to life. She's brought a whole new life and experience to storytelling that I've never even considered possible.
So I'm interested in how the idea of Tal and Rue started and how you decided to start working on these writing projects together.
So Tal and Rue are the names of our Dungeons and Dragons characters. Tal is short for Taliesin, and Rue is short for Ruta. She plays Taliesin, I play Ruta. They're kind of like our go-to babies. If you were to choose in any like campaign, if we were to play another campaign or game outside of ours, that's who we'd probably bring over and explore new worlds with. So the travels part of it came in at a time when we were wanting to travel more in the world. We were wanting to go, you know, hit all 50 states and then hop over to international. So we got this crazy cool idea to do what our D&D characters do. And, you know, as they go around and travel, before you're like super cool, high level 20, where you could just wind walk across the world. When they were just camping, you know, you go out, you fight monsters, you help people, you make your own food, and you camp. We wanted to kind of do that as well. So we bought a camper van and fixed it up, you know, gutted out the inside, put walls, put shelves, and everything we needed to live out on the road and camp. And we did that for a bit. Still have it, still love it, but life happens. And every now and then we'll go out and we'll be like, hey, what do you want to do? Do you want to go out to this camping spot? Do you want to go hit up this state? Let's travel like our D&D characters. Let's go out and get a skillet. Let's cook the food like they do. Let's just gather around this campfire and tell stories. And it just kind of blew up into this amazing thing where we can get to live and act and experience the things they do, minus fighting monsters. But it was just so fun. And it's still so fun to just be able to do that and experience it together. And it also, off of that, spurs these ideas of creating new stories or creating characters. One of our characters, I'm on a tangent now, created was Jacita the Enchantress. She actually came up out of nowhere while we were traveling on one of these trips. It was just, we were role-playing in the car, playing a D&D game in the car, you know, not rolling dice. We had our phones out and we're rolling dice. And she just spurred up out of nowhere, came up in this NPC, who later became a player character played by me. And it's just, we've fallen in love with the concept of this D&D doesn't have to be around a table. It doesn't have to be digital. It can be anywhere. You could travel literally anywhere, in a van, in a plane, on a boat, and just play and tell stories.
Okay, so you are legitimately describing my dream, and what I'm actually working towards right now is being able to just go travel. So we are 100% going off on a tangent about this now.
Sure.
So how long, like, were you guys just taking a lot of trips? Did you just hit the road and stay on the road for a long time? Like, please tell me more.
Yes, we ended up getting the camper. It's been about a year now. And then, of course, the pandemic. In the middle of it, we're like, we don't want to be around people, obviously. So let's go to these, you know, more remote places. We can hit up campgrounds officially and pay like $15 a night and stay there. Or we could go to what's like USDA land, which is anything. If you look at a map anywhere on Google Maps, USDA land is all like the green minus the parks. And you could literally go there, park your car, camp for free overnight. So that's what we did for on and off throughout the year since we've had it. And the first night we camped, it was in the middle of this, you know, very dark and scary land where it was like, you know, hunting here, be careful where you walk. And we're like, okay, not going far. And we just camped out there. It was just us, nobody there. We got there, you know, daylight still, prepared our food, ate everything inside, put up a projector, watched an episode of Top Gear or something. And then night hit. Oh, also, we had our cats in the camper as well. I don't recommend traveling with cats. It's very difficult, but it can be done. So we're sitting there watching the show, eating our dinner, and it's like midnight. And we're like, I can't sleep because it's super scary outside. And you don't have, you know, your protection of your house or, you know, your neighbors around you or whatever. It's just you and the stars and this outside. And it was just this eye-opening experience to be like, you remember that first time your D&D characters camp? Everyone goes out and like you, your DM's like, where do you camp? And you're like, okay, I do this. And you're like, okay, it's easy, whatever, next day. It really added this experience of like, you know, it's not just you snap your fingers, click, it's the next day. It's like, what do you experience at night? You hear these noises you've never heard before. There's this crackle of thunder off in the distance, and your characters may not have ever heard of thunder or experienced it before. And it's just like you get to live throughout what they're doing and experiencing. And we survived the night. We're going to stay there the next day and thought, no, we love this so much. Let's continue going on to our next place. And it's just kind of from there, we just kept hitting up these new stops, USDA land after USDA land, you know, stop at some hotels along the way, and just did this for as long as we wanted to and still do it. And it's just, it's super cool. I can say amazing 1,000 times. It's amazing.
And so through all of this, like is Tal and Rue and your book series, like, is that your main income that's helping you pay for the travels?
Hopefully one day.
Okay.
It does. No. The book series has been doing fundamentally very well, we think. We started it in 2019. We released the first one. The hope is, yes, we'd love for it to be this, you know, supportive thing where we just live off the books, live off our creations, and live off of everything we do and create through Tal and Rue Travels. So hopefully one day.
Fair enough. Okay, so walk me through the steps that y'all took when you wanted, like when you realized that Tal and Rue Travels was a thing that you wanted to do and you started wanting to write and publish. How did you start?
That's all on Ashley. She has been writing, you know, fanfics and books for forever, basically. She released her first book. Well, she wrote her first book years ago, tried to get it published, tried, you know, going to hundreds of different publishers. And if anyone's ever tried to publish a book, it's super difficult, right? And then cut to 2018, she found out, hey, I could just self-publish on Amazon. Let's just go ahead and do that. And she published her first book. It's called Shifter. Nothing related to D&D, but it is available. It's very good. It could actually very well work for a D&D setting. And then after that, we had been playing our D&D game for a few years at that point. And she was like, Scott, I love what we do. I love this world that you've built and these characters we've made. I would love to make it into a book series. And it's just not for other people, just for ourselves to say, hey, we made a book, you know, we work together doing what we love and put this out there. And it's to show that other people can do it too. You know, it's just takes a little bit of effort and a little bit of time. And then you just feel good about it in the end, seeing it, holding it in your hand. It's just one of the most fantastic feelings I could ever experience. Just picking up the book. It's like the first time I picked up like Harry Potter. I'm like, this is pretty cool, you know? And I was like, one day it would be nice to have a book. And we did that. And it's just, I'm looking at them right next to me and like, they look so official. And I'm like, if I saw them in a store, I'd be like, that's right up my alley. You know, that's right up next to the Dragonlance series or the Dritz novels. It's just being able to create what you love and what you do and have it be so close to your heart is fantastic.
Yeah, I can only imagine how amazing of an experience that is to hold your own book for the first time.
It's like, you know, picking up like a precious kitten or something. Like, it's just so soft and fuzzy and it feels good. And then being able to read it and know that, like, who wrote this? Oh, wait, I did, you know?
Well, I mean, we've talked a little bit about the concept of how the Thread of Souls book series started, but... Mm-hmm. How do you share your writing responsibilities? How did you actually transition the story you've been telling from your game into a novel series?
So I am the DM of the homebrew world of Thread of Souls. Started in 2015, as I said. Started with three players, myself, Ashley, and two of our friends. And then from there, it wasn't even like, you know, growing up, I had a lot of friends who were like, let's do sports. And I'm like, I don't really like sports. Let's do D&D. And they're like, nah, I'll pass, thanks. So we hit it up. I you know, sent an invite to a few of my friends. And then, like, out of the five I sent to, two of them showed up. And they're like, yeah, we can do this, I guess. And it's kind of a crumbling feeling as a DM. You want to do this. And they're like, I guess. And so Ashley sat down and we all built a character. And then from there, it just kind of spiraled out into what is now Thread of Souls. I guess to backtrack a little bit, we started watching Critical Role, like a bunch of other people I'm sure have. And we're like, what is this D&D? We've heard about it. You know, we've played Magic the Gathering. And that was like, that's the closest thing we could get to, I guess, a Dungeons and Dragons type feel. And so after watching Critical Role, I was like, that's it. That's what I want to do. I went out, I bought the Player's Handbook, I bought the DM's guidebook and the Monster Manual. Called up a few of my friends, two showed up, and then we're like, cool, let's do what we can with a small group. So I kind of took what I had been watching from one shots and everything and molded this first little like intro dungeon, I guess you want to say, where the characters are met by this NPC called Old Man Jenkins. And I guess my love of Scooby-Doo came out because the villain's always Old Man Jenkins. And then it was about Jenkins saying, help, my son or grandson has fallen into a well. Heroes, help me out. And so none of us knew what we were doing, right? We picked up a dice and we're like, this thing has 20 sides on it. That's too many. So we're sitting there rolling and playing and having fun and kind of just learning to get into the characters. And it comes out very well. Like, the first quest is very well written in the book. Ashley took what we had and kind of twisted it on its side, or its head, if you will, and added much more detail. You know, it's hard to explain, you know, what goes on the head of a writer who just gets into it, right? Because as a DM, you set this scene and your characters flesh it out and do things, and you don't expect what they're, you know, have no idea what they're going to do, but you just kind of roll with it. So the scene was described, Old Man Jenkins comes along, dive in the well, rescue this kid, and then it turns out there's this golem inside who is powered by arcane magic, and the golem fights the heroes inside and they end up winning. Jenkins comes out and he's like, thank you, you've passed my test, and then disappears, right? A little more context within the game, obviously, but then Ashley takes what we did and just, you know, puts a beautiful little bow on it and adds these descriptive details of, like, you can feel the tension in the room. You could just see the glisten in Jenkins' eyes, this wizard mage, as he describes what he wants the party to do, or he describes, thank you for fighting this for me, and then disappears. You know, as your characters, it's interesting to be like, you're obviously tired after fighting something, right? But then you don't really realize it. You're like, okay, moving on to the next thing. But then in the book, she writes all these descriptive information, details about, for instance, Brother Zok, one of the paladin characters, who gets pretty beat up during the fight. And then he talks about, you know, like, his ripped clothes, how he's tired and sweaty, and all these things you could kind of connect to and feel as a reader and be like, yeah, you know, you would feel this way, or it better connects you to who these people are. And kind of from there, it's everything. It's just, I try to do the best descriptions as I can. And then somehow, magically, she creates even more better, delicious descriptions than I could ever thought imaginable. And then from, like, yeah, the homebrew, the setting of this little fight in the well, I was like, all right, cool, one off, we're done, right? No, they wanted to play more. So I was like, okay, it's like 3 hours in. I didn't plan anything, but let's go on. And then from there, we just kind of rolled out to kind of this Lord of the Rings side quest. I kind of picked up early on, just learning from what I knew, right? I love Lord of the Rings, so I was like, let's go into this mine area and you'll fight this Balrog type thing. And then Ashley just took that and made it so different than from what we did in the game. But it was still the same, if that makes any sense. Like, we know what we play, but then we read it and we're like, yeah, that's what we did. But you've made it this way. You've improved it and enhanced it into this book form. It's so special.
Yeah, that sounds really cool. So I know that the whole series isn't out yet. You've got 3 books out of 8. Is that right?
3 out of 8, yes.
Okay. So is the plan for the entire series to be reflective of what you do in these games, or does it split off at any point?
The entire octology, yeah, fancy word, we found it out, we're like, love it, great. It's kind of themed into the overall theme of, not to spoil much, of this spider cult. that is within the book. And we love how it came out to be this 8-book thing. And we're playing book 7 right now. Like, we've worked out from book 1 through 3. We're done with those. So we're like, okay, this, what we've done the past 3 years happens in book 4. And then this will happen in book 5 and this 6 and so on and so forth. And it's just so funny it happened to turn out to be this 8-series thing where this spider god is like the overarching villain. And we're like, love it. Great. Print it. Done. And yeah, everything, literally everything that happens in the books is from the roll of a dice. Which
That's so cool.
you're betting on chance, right? And you're betting, like, there are sometimes things happen in the game where we're like, nah, this could only happen in a book. Like, there's no way this should have happened, but it did.
Yeah, like that time when you need a nat 20 in order to succeed, yeah. And like, there's no way, and then it does.
Yeah. Okay, I'll give you a little tease of the next book 4. This happens in book 4. So we're fighting this ancient white dragon. It's not looking well. So in the game, right, it's terrible. I've statted up this thing, and I was like, they're all, what are they, level 10, 11 at that point? I statted up this thing majorly. Because I was like, you could take a regular ancient white dragon. Let's sprinkle in some hit points, sprinkle in like an extra attack, whatever. And you also got like a giant ally on your side. So how could you really lose? Giant ally dies. Okay. Moving on. This character falls. This character falls. And I'm like, oh, how do I avoid a TPK? But this is before we even thought about the book series, mind you. So some of the stuff even came up where we're like, we're not doing a book. And then it just turns out to be this big epic moment of where these characters are down and literally could be dead next turn. And I'm like, great, story over, wrap it up, move on to the next one. And then miraculously, through roll of a dice and through incredible role play, I would just say that something ends up happening that is like, no, this is movie magic. And then, you know, if you look at like Critical Role, you're like, there are moments that like, nah, this is definitely scripted. And I can guarantee you, there are moments in this book where you're going to be like, no, they had that planned out. No, we did not. Like, I'm still shocked some of these characters are alive at this point. It's been 6 years.
I mean, that's a long time for a character to survive in a campaign that's still going.
Yeah. And I'm a pretty lenient DM. I'm in it for the role play. I'm in it for the story, right?
Mm-hmm.
Ashley loves give me that be mean to my character. You know, hit him when it's down, be mean, do all these things, be dark, be gritty. And I'm like, I'm too nice. I don't want to do that. And she's like, I can take it. And I'm like, fine. And then afterward, it's like, I feel so bad. And she's like, no, that was great. That's good storytelling. Like, people who read that are going to be like, yes, num, 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 popcorn, you know?
Yeah, she needs that gritty realness to put it in the books.
Yes. And it's great because when you go back and we watch Lord of the Rings, quite often, as anyone probably does. And it's great when you go through and you're writing a book and you're like, okay, how would they have, you know, how would Tolkien have written this? What was going through his mind? And you put it into the context of a D&D game and you're like, okay, this character wants and, you know, acts like this, wants to do this. And then like you see from a D&D standpoint, you know, if like, it's just like your characters become this living presence and like they become alive. I don't know, like watching Lord of the Rings, it's like, it's so fascinating just to get into the mind of how did this happen and then seeing, you know, what it can lead to next.
Hey, entrepreneurs. I love introducing you to new creators every episode, but I could really use your support. I would love to invite you to join our Patreon page where you'll gain access to behind the scenes content, add your questions to upcoming interviews, and you could even receive a shout out on our site in an upcoming episode. To learn more, go to lightheartadventures.com/RPG. And now back to the show. So, okay, I'm going to try to figure out a way to ask this to where you're like not giving spoilers, but mm-hmm. All right, you've already played through a lot of the books that haven't come out yet. But yep. When you're just kind of like looking to the end of the series, how much of the plot points are still there? Like, you know that you are eventually wanting the characters to like get to this spot, or mm-hmm. is it all just completely random?
That is a question. So we have the overarching plot. We know how we want it to go. It's like storytelling 101. You have a beginning, mm-hmm. you have a middle, you have an end where you want to hit. That kind of changed for us when we had characters and players come and go through the campaign. I had built a campaign, like not around one specific character, but one character's backstory was just like, it inspired me more to create this end plot, this villain, right? So from there, and mind you, still before the books, we had characters leave the game, and I completely scrambled to find like, okay, how am I going to make this work and bring everyone together? So we ended up having Taliesin and Ruta. They were made much later in the games. We started out with Jade, Zok, and Sen. And then from there, they kind of go off on their, you know, Aragorn, Legolas, Gimli quest. Then we have the Pippin and Merry, right? The separate tangents of Taliesin and Ruta. But they didn't come until much later when other people left. And we're like, okay, this one character, Unalay, who is the first chapter in our very first book, Phantom Five, her sister gets taken by this creature, this basically Death Knight. And she follows her soul, more or less, throughout different planes trying to find her. She ends up running into the original characters, Jade, Zok, and Sen, and then eventually they spin her off and she runs into Taliesin and Ruta, because when these characters left, the other two, Artemis and Scar, when they left Unalaya's kind of party, she didn't have anywhere to go. And so we're like, okay, let's maybe introduce these new characters, because Ashley was like, I want to make a new character, because the party that left with Jade and everything, I was like, I don't know what to do with their story right now. Let's just leave them over there and we'll come back to them later. As a DM, you're always picking up things and learning to do things on the fly, right? So Ashley's like, I'm going to make Taliesin. And I'm like, cool. How about if Taliesin has a little side companion they travel with? And so we're sitting there thinking, okay, who could Taliesin travel with? And I was like, how about a brain in a jar? And she's like, brain in a jar? And I was like, I'm spitballing here. Because he's from the Deep Hollows, which for D&D people fans would be the Underdark, where mind flayers live, where these brain creations live. So like, okay, no, how about this creature he made, like this golem? I'm like, no, I mean, you could if you wanted to. And I was like, no, how about a dark dwarf to go along with this whole Underdark Deep Hollow thing? And then Ruta was kind of born from that. In D&D terms, she is a Duergar. But we've kind of revamped and completely, oh gosh, this is a whole nother tangent we could get into. Completely redid the Dark Elf and Dark Dwarf histories from what you are probably familiar with from D&D. That's a whole other process. And so we brought in these characters because Unalay's backstory was the one I wanted to focus on. She had this whole thing of the spider god, right? And I was like, that's cool. I love this spider god. Where can we go with this? So it was like, Ashley's like, I'll create Taliesin, who worships this spider god. And I was like, yes, I love that. Go. And then Ruta's this character who he runs across with. And she comes from this caste society of dark dwarfs who everyone's born, they receive a blessing from their god. And she, unfortunately, was not blessed with anything. And so she's kind of an outcast of her society and was sent away from the city, ran into Taliesin. He saved her life. They traveled together like a Han Solo Chewie type of thing, right? And from there, they meet Unalay. She's looking for answers. She has this like spider symbol. She's got a few quests to go. And she's like, I have no idea what this means, right? No one knows anything about the spider god above on the surface, whereas the Deep Hollows is beneath the surface. Everyone's like, yeah, spider god, super bad. And then people on the surface see it and they're like, yeah, we think that's evil, but yeah, we'll see. So Taliesin comes along and he's like, no, that's definitely, she's the greatest god who's ever lived. Like, come worship her with me. And Unalay's like, well, she's probably wrapped up in this whole thing that took my sister. And then they kind of form this bond of like, okay, well, let's go find her together. Yeah, it's branches off from that, basically. And then we come back and pick up stories from the other characters later when they came back and played with the game. Yeah, we have... Oh, I can keep going, but that's so much. I mean, we built the homebrew world of Thread of Souls. Like, I built this whole thing. I built the map and everything through Incarnate. And then I'm like, cool, this is great. I don't know anything about D&D. I'll do that little well quest at the beginning. I'll throw in this Lord of the Rings, fight this Balrog thing, and then Ashley will change it and make it really super cool, right? So then we go into, okay, I don't really know quite how to DM very well. So I'm going to buy one of these campaign books. And I'm like, who's this vampire dude? He looks super cool and suave. I pick up Strahd, Ravenloft, right? Barovia. So we end up doing that. And then we're like, okay, cool. We play it in the game. we do really well. Characters win, straw is destroyed, because, and this is where it gets kind of interesting, right? So to avoid any like copyright infringement from obviously this dude is Strahd in the book, Ashley and I had this idea to instead make Strahd a woman and to completely like turn it on its head, flip everything over, introduce new characters, introduce new ways how they act, how they interact with the world. So it's not only this copyright infringement, we get rid of that, but it's this new take on a familiar trope, I guess, if it were, of this vampire, right? And after Strahd, we're kind of like, okay, I'm diving back into this homebrew. I think I understand how to DM a game and make a story. Let's go. Let's run with it and continue and see what we can do.
I find it so fascinating just how this came about for you guys, and just thinking about the fact that, like, yeah, normally if you're going to write a book series, you've got your overarching plot that you want to hit. But when it's based off of what's happening in your campaign, like that, I feel like there's so many things that have to change and be adjusted, especially when you have people coming in and out.
Yes, for sure. And that's kind of the benefit of the blessing that kind of happened with these, our friends, we're sorry to see them go, but you know, life gets in the way, things happen and they went off. So we kind of took their characters and we're like, hey, we're making this book series. You know that, right? And they're like, yeah, sure. So we did what we, you know, we knew how they played them. We are, you know, Ashley's so good at observing and watching people, and her psychology, you know, major is very good at just observing. And it's so, it's so great to see her do this and like take control of other people's characters and get into it. And it's like making them an NPC, but they're also this player character, right? So she knows how they act, what they want, what they do, what their goals are. And she comes to me and she's like, hey, let's bring them back. I know the players aren't here, but they're still in this story, and their story, their individual story is not finished. We may have this big plot, right? Gods coming in and, you know, destroying the planet, whatever, wiping out whatever they want. But we also have to keep in mind, there are characters in this world that have threads connecting to individual backstories or some other character, right? And so you have to kind of connect all of them together in a way that is streamlined and kind of innovate out from there to connect it to the main plot, to make sure that not only that this connected here, right? Because it makes sense, but also, hey, Artemis is from this war-torn country, right? Okay, we ended off in the game, right? Her character left, her player left. And we're like, all right, we'll come back. And we're like picking up, okay, how can we use her to go back to the place in our world called the Southern Kingdoms, where she's from? How can we pick that back up and continue to tell her story to fruition, to completion, right? We're kind of doing this throughout when we're playing the main game. We're having like these mini games where we'll go out, not necessarily maybe sit down with dice at a table, but sit down and role play and then have like a dice on our phone and say, okay, this is what happens with Artemis, right? We still want it to be this good story we're telling, but we also want it to be, you know, decided by a dice and stick to the fundamentals of a tabletop RPG. So it's not, you know, this is the story, this is what happens, this is it, done. We want it to be, you know, what happens on her journey? What happens on these other characters' individual journeys? What would make, you know, sense from like trying to write like a campaign guide, right? What would make sense, but you could also make it coincide with the rolls of the dice?
That makes a lot of sense. I do want to spend a little bit more time on just going through some of your processes. So you come up with the homebrew and you play through it, and then Ashley takes it and spins it into these amazing fleshed out novels. And then what happens next?
So we'll sit down after each game. We'll play like a 4 or 5 hour game each Sundays, basically. If we were like, we're streaming this, but it's for our own like personal, me and her at a table. After each Sunday, that following Monday, she'll sit down and remember everything that happened and write it down in like a Word document. And then from there, she'll add in descriptions that would kind of, you know, enhance the scene, if you will, kind of the salt and pepper. And then add in, you know, character inner monologues. Because as reading a book, right, you kind of want to also get that inner dialogue of what they're thinking at the time. That's kind of the hard part of not being able to play the character, but knowing how they operate and knowing what they would want to say or think at the time. So she'll sit down and go through the entire game, writing down monologue, writing down dialogue, writing down descriptions, and entering scenes like, you know, transferring scenes, you know, instead of being like, you travel between the woods. She'll, you know, maybe spatter in some, you know, descriptive text of like what exactly is in these woods. So the readers would know and kind of get a better connection to the story and to the world itself. Because as a D&D table, if you sit down and describe everything that's in these woods or everything a character's thinking, it might take up the majority of the game. And we don't want to do that. We want to get through and we want to tell a story. We want to get to the action and we want to get, you know, set in that good RP. And then after that, she'll sit down and probably we'll sit down. I'll play a video game, mute it, and she'll write a book. Or write a scene, pick up a character. The book is set from different characters' point of views. So it's kind of like Game of Thrones, if you're familiar with that series. So we'll have a view from Taliesin, for instance, and it's exactly his, you know, description of what's happening, his view of the world of what's happening in his inner dialogue. We'll have, you know, other characters who speak throughout it and those characters he speaks with. And like for fights, for instance, it's if Taliesin and Ruta are fighting a swarm of undead, as they do in the first book, Phantom Five, it's from one of their views. And instead of, you know, you getting like Taliesin fires off a blast of these spells, it's also him noticing how Ruta fights and noticing how she brandishes her blade and how she shouts the word liquor to light it up with fire. It's all these little nuances, right, that you do in the game. But then you add in and sprinkle in these extra little details that just make it pop, make it just expand and develop.
That's got to be really fun.
Getting to sit down and see how she does it is just incredible.
Mm-hmm.
She sees a story and she sees where it's going and she knows exactly what the characters are feeling and what they would do and what they would say. Like, for instance, if we have a conversation in the game, right? You know, it's generally could be short, could be long. She's not going to be able to remember everything, but she remembers the gist of it. She understands, you know, if you're sad, if your emotions are making you angry, you're going to say this as this character and they're going to respond with this. And she knows we had, for instance, two characters, Wash and brother Zoc and Taliesin, were all sitting together and conversating and had this like big moment of, you know, frustration and anger. And each of them is going through this character growth and development. And they had a really very nice conversation in the game, all three of them, their players did. And then from there, this happened, 3 years ago. And we just now wrote that last year. And so she's been able to remember that conversation and sprinkle in her, you know, individual character details from these people she's watched and grew up with and played with. And she knows how they act and they operate to give them more fluid dialogue to advance not only their story, but the plot as a whole.
Yeah, that is really amazing that she's able to bring that all forward once you're ready to get to that point in the novels.
Kind of from there, it's she'll write it. And after she's done with three or four, she'll send them to me and then I'll read it and I'll act as the editor for it. So I'll, you know, check in grammar mistakes, sentence structure, all that. And then after that, I'll send it back. We'll do three more, and then we'll go back and forth for... Typically, it takes about a year for us to conceptualize, plan, develop, implement, and release a book. So that's what we have throughout 2026. We had Phantom Five in 2019, Threat of Souls, Ash of Thunder in 2020, and then Path of the Spiders in 2021, which just released in August. So the next one, we are working with some titles... Nothing set in stone yet, but it will release next summer. So after that, and then she'll go to, I think she'll put it in like a Word document, right? She'll write it out, type it out, and then she goes through the Amazon publishing site and make sure it all looks pretty. And then from there, she's so creative, right? She'll go through and make a cover art for it. We use Canva, and she'll go through Canva. And she'll think about, okay, what is the heart of this specific book? What is the soul? What is like the overarching imagery, right, that sets the tone? And so for Threat of Souls book one, Phantom Five, we wanted to have this, okay, it has to do with these feathers that travel through different planes, that help guide characters through different planes. And that's one of the big things that happen in book one, is the characters find these feathers and then end up going on wild, crazy adventures into different planes where they learn about this spider threat and this god threat and meet everyone else. So she took it and added the feather for this, the main cover image. And then the vast majority of it also takes place in a desert. So she's like, okay, what could I do as the background behind this feather? Is this this starry night picture of a desert with some ruins in the background? And that immediately connects you to, okay, this book is going to be focused on a desert. And this feather will play a role in it somewhere. And we'll just have to find out and see. And then it gets even better, right? There's little nuances throughout each cover that kind of tell what it's about. But if you look in the bottom left corner, there is a spider web that is slowly beginning to take over each cover to go along with the theme of Taliesin has left his cult behind, right? This spider cult. And he goes adventuring to seek answers, to search more about who he is, and uncovers these characters, and to find out why this cult of his is wanting to summon this god and what they really want to do in the world. And so it's like, while he's figuring that out, not only that, but this spider threat is kind of overtaking each one of our books as well. And it's just, it's fascinating to see these little details that are thrown into each one.
That's really cool. And I've never thought of Canva for a way to make book covers. Like, that's awesome.
Yes. Canva is a godsend. Oh my gosh. It's the natural 20 of art.
And it's really interesting too that it's like a whole, I mean, that you guys are able to knock out a whole book in about a year's time on average.
Yeah. I mean, it's, we're working on next is this kind of documentary type for our YouTube of how you kind of can make a book and what the process is. And then we're going to film it, you know, do some editing on it, and then release it along with the book next year is our plan anyway.
Well, honestly, that does lead me into wanting to spend a couple minutes talking about your YouTube. So it looks like the videos are pretty new, but
yes, it's a new process.
yeah, let's go over, you know, what it is that you've got so far and what the plan for your YouTube channel is.
Sure. So I, along with my journalism, you know, background, I love video editing. It's what I started out doing and then kind of got into the writing aspect of it as well. So we'll go through our Talonier website, Talonier Travels website, and write articles focused on helping other storytellers and dungeon masters and writers help tell their best story. And the way we do that is, you know, helping them develop characters or find ways to advance the plot or role-playing tips as well. And so it's finding that middle ground of, okay, certain people like to read articles and we would try our best to make them streamlined, make them short and give, you know, the best information up front without going into this too much detail. And then from there, it's making these articles into videos so we can showcase, you know, if we're talking about character development, we have a video on there about how you can describe the way a character looks without saying, okay, they wear this specific color. It's just the way they present themselves. You know, they like this color. They wear this color. This color is how they, you know, dress themselves or adorn their armor or something. And so I kind of took that and made it into this video using descriptions from games like Baldur's Gate 3, where you go in and you customize your character fully from the way they look to like the color of their skin and the color of their eyes and hair, and saying that, you know, if you want to make a character in D&D, this is some things to keep in mind, right? Not only how they act, but how they look. Because if you have the way a character looks, other players at the table are going to be like, okay, I understand, you know, okay, you wear this color or you wield this certain weapon. I maybe want to go out and buy you something to help adorn this weapon or buy you a purple flower so you can put it in your hair. And it's just little nuances like that to help increase role play or increase development as a whole. There are other videos on there as well, kind of showcasing our goofiness of the Threat of Souls book series and our love of Lord of the Rings and gaming in general. There will be art that Ashley has drawn that will put some music to the backdrop to kind of bringing things full circle. There's the music that at the beginning of our website that you said that will be on there that just kind of drives and helps you improve storytelling, right? If you want to, what I love to do as a storyteller is listen to music. Every time I plan a D&D session, I will bring up my playlist of, okay, what is the session going to be this day? Is it going to be happy? I will use some, you know, uplifting emotional tunes. Is it going to be somber? Are there high emotions? Are characters feeling depressed or down? I'll find some gaming music from Elder Scrolls that kind of feel more somber or sad. Not like I'm depressed, cry, but, you know, kind of just this feeling of telling and weaving the story more or less. And I love what Ashley does is she is a writer. She is an artist and she's done these things forever. And I fell in love with her by just watching her do that. And I love it. And so I'll add what I'm good at was I video editing. So I'll go find music that I think, okay, here's, for instance, Jacita. We have a video of Jacita, the enchantress up there that Ashley drew. What music guides her? What does she listen to while she sits down and reads spells or practices magic? And we're thinking, okay, get into her head. She would listen to this, like, you know, soothing, melodical, classical music, Beethoven, Bach. So we're like, okay, we'll search songs on the internet. And we found one called The French Library. And we're like, that's perfect. She's from this rigid, strict background of this magical arcane study called the Citadel, which is the ruler of magical law throughout the land of Corvintos, which is the main continent of Threat of Souls. As someone from there, she spends her time, you know, reading and sitting and being kind of this tranquil, peaceful moment of listening to these peaceful musics, instruments like lutes and a lot of string type instruments. And it's just being able to listen to that and watch the art come to life. Where our hope is to kind of get you in that mood to be like, what would your character want to listen to if they were being drawn or if they were out, you know, on a stroll, walking around, doing the thing they're good at? What would they be listening to kind of help them be better off, you know, in their natural element, whatever? And what would you as a player want them to listen to so you could get into their head better? And that's kind of what we're hoping for is progressing forward with this YouTube and each video we do. It's just ways to help people create and people write and publish and know that, hey, you can do this, right? Like if you just set out a goal for yourself, you know, have like we do a year goal, right? Conceptualize, produce it, release it. It's possible. Yeah, it's a lot of work, but it's fun in the end. And mainly do it for you, right? My main thing, and I hit myself all the time with this, is you do what you want to do. If you want to make a video, make it. You don't need some fancy camera. You don't need some fancy microphone. Just do it. If it makes you happy, do it. If what you want to do is create tabletop DMs guilds, do it. If you want to write a novel, yes, great, awesome. When you come to that point of I want to do it and you actually set a goal and do it, you'll feel really, really fantastic. Threat of Souls has really changed the way I see how we want to do business and how we want to continue what we do to bring joy to ourselves and to bring joy to others and to see them join in on this world and know that D&D at its heart, any tabletop game at its heart, is just togetherness. It's telling a shared story. It's not DM versus player, vice versa. It's you want to set out and create show experience together, this amazing Lord of the Rings type epic that you can just do forever and ever and ever.
I love that so much. And I really cannot wait to see what all you continue to come up with and just share with us.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Okay. I know we're running a little low on time, but I do want to make sure that I get a chance to ask you something that I like to ask in every interview, which we spend a lot of time going over the positives and like the fun parts of working and creating these stories and like this industry that we love. But I like to acknowledge that there are some challenges. So when you look back over the past couple of years of starting Talonrue Travels and getting these books up off the ground, starting this YouTube channel and just everything that you've been doing to get this off the ground, what would you say has been the most challenging part?
Oh, wow. It's like I'm in a job interview now. I mean, just getting started. That sounds so cliche and so like a trope, right? But we didn't set out to be like, let's play D&D to make a book series, right? It was let's play D&D because it's fun, because it's a way to get away from work. At the end of the day, you just want to relax, right? It's just the challenges of it are finding time to do it. There's only so many hours in a day, but we all have the same amount of hours. So if you just find the time And it could be 10 minutes every day, 1 hour, you know, 3 hours every day. But if you just focus on finding that time to devote any amount of time to the thing you want to do, that's the challenge of overcoming, right? It's telling yourself, nah, I don't have time, right? You find it throughout the day. Keeping a schedule. Oh my gosh, where's my book? It's over there. Keeping a schedule journal of what we're doing throughout each day has been immensely great to keeping a schedule and to making sure that we hit the goals we want to hit. You know, we have a year timeline, so we want to make sure we get that out. So we have fans who are like, hey, this book's not out yet. They're not going to read it anymore, right? So we want to make sure we're continuing our promises and having that goal set. Just making sure you're goal-oriented. That's the challenge. Finding the time is probably the biggest thing I would say.
Fair enough. Like, it's really hard to make yourself do the work when you don't really want to do it that day.
That too. We're kind of in that point of, it's just us. We're doing this ourselves. We don't have other people and other time constraints. And I know there are people out there who are playing games like this, who want to do a business like this, where they're like, hey, we don't have, you know, the people aren't meeting to play or stream every week when we stream, right? And it's just like finding that middle ground of what can you do to make sure you can still do the thing you want to do while overcoming that challenge. And it's difficult. And I hope just people will get out there and just be like, I'll do it, right? It's like my least favorite thing to do really is Instagram videos. I'm not good at it, you know, but if I do it, I feel good about it. And it's fun to do in the process, or these YouTube videos, or planning D&D. I am not very good at planning D&D, like minus like finding the time to do it, right? But when I sit down and do it, when I put on some music, or when I play Elder Scrolls Online that day before, that inspires me to get into this moment of overcoming that I'm not good enough, or I shouldn't do this. I should do something else. No, it's I want to do this. And if you find joy in the thing you want to do, that's going to help you create even more.
Well, that brings me up to the counterpoint, which is when you look back over everything, what would you say has been the most rewarding part?
Ooh, working with Ashley, working with my wife, right? It's just, it's been so fun to take that jump, to take that risk of, we both left our corporate jobs around the same time, right? And she's like, you know, come home, let's build this world. Let's create this. This is a great idea we have going here. Let's just do it together. And sitting there playing game after game, week after week, and telling this story with her and seeing the way her face lights up when one of her characters rolls a nat 20, right? It's the same thing if I was playing with, you know, a bunch of people. I just love seeing people get happy when their characters do something epic or fail so bad that it's funny, but you find a way to make it tied into the story. And it's just, it's 100% working with her. It's 100% being able to tell the story together and build this world together and having someone that is right there by your side.
It's amazing. I can definitely agree. I really like working with my spouse too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I know we've talked about when you expect to have the next book out. We've talked about the YouTube channel and kind of what your plans are for growing that. Is there anything else that's upcoming that we haven't necessarily talked about that you wanted to share?
Yeah, we have a few things on the pipeline, right? We have officially been working on an audiobook for the entire Octology. We are in the process of talking with the narrator, and unfortunately, but fortunately, all I can say is they are a very big name in the tabletop community, and we're very, very honored and humbled to be able to work with this person. And we are aiming for a release, hopefully, start of 2022 with our first audiobook. We are also kind of working on a few one-offs because we'll do one-shots in our world with other characters. We're going to work on some one-shot books, one-shot short stories, and novels as well throughout kind of releasing these other 8 books. And then another big thing we're working on is a comic book series with art from Ashley as well.
That is a lot going on.
It's a never-ending process, but, you know, we always have something to do.
Yeah, that is amazing. And I'm, like I said it before, I'm really looking forward to seeing everything that you guys come out with as time goes on and keep knocking out all this cool stuff.
Thank you. Yeah, no, it's been super, like, pleasurable to hang out and talk with you. And you're very good at what you do, I gotta say.
Well, thank you. Well, thank you so much for coming on today. If people want to find you and find your books and your website, where should they go?
We are Talon Rue Travels basically everywhere with a social tag. Our website is talonruedungeonloot.com. You search Thread of Souls on Amazon or Goodreads, it'll come up. And we are very, very social on Twitter and Instagram and are always trying to build a community and hang out with like-minded tabletop role players, writers, and Dungeons & Dragons players. We love talking about it. We love hanging out.
Perfect. Well, I will definitely have links to all of those in the show notes. Seriously, thank you so much for coming on today, Scott. This has been fun.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. Yeah, it's been super fun.
You just finished another episode of Role, Play, Grow. To check out the show notes from today's episode, you can go to lightheartadventures.com/RPG. To keep up with every episode, please subscribe on your podcast player of choice. And if you're enjoying the show, I would absolutely love if you would leave me a review and share this episode with your friends. Your review might even get featured on an upcoming episode. To follow me on Twitter, you can either find me at LightheartADV for our business account, or at KetraWCR for tweets on gaming, my dog Bowser, and other random shenanigans. You can also find us as Lightheart Adventures on both Instagram and Patreon. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you next time on Role, Play, Grow.